Good morning and welcome to the KGNC Golden Spread Agribusiness News Hour. I'm your host, Bryce Hudson, and on this Monday edition, we are talking some Texas wheat with Ms. Steely Fischbacher, the Director of Policy at Texas Wheat. How are you doing today, Ms. Steely?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Of course, it is always nice to talk a little bit about Texas wheat and what's happening up here in the Panhandle for wheat producers. And I know up here we are getting close to finishing up our harvest season. We talked about it last week. How are things looking almost towards the tail end up here for Texas wheat? And how did things sell out this year?
Well, so we think our harvest is basically complete in most of the Southern Plains states. So Texas, Oklahoma, and even Kansas wrapping up this week. We're getting a lot of additional progress in Colorado, Nebraska, and even as far north as South Dakota. So we continue to get harvest reports from those states, as well as looking at that quality data and how those tests are coming out. So really good information to be following. At the same time, using that information to market this crop domestically as well as to our overseas customers. So right in the middle of that process. This week, we did get an updated figure from USDA on what our Texas production would be. They have us reduced to 35.1 million bushel. So they actually reduced our yield down to 27 bushels per acre for the average statewide yield, which reduced that total overall production figure. That actually comes in less than half of last year's production. So our five-year average is kind of in between 60 and 70 million bushels, so obviously a very small crop for our state, specifically here in the Panhandle, you know, fewer acres harvested and then very reduced yields. So that's kind of what we've seen for harvest. At the same time, you know, harvest is an important time for marketing that crop as well. We saw our July futures contract close out last week at the $8.67 range. So compare that back to the May high. So the high for that contract was in May of $13.79. That's a $5 difference that we saw just as futures markets dropping off $5 between May and then the end of that July contract in the middle of July. So quite a big variation in prices for this year's crop. We know that a lot of our farmers had contracted at least a portion of their crop or priced some of that early on in the season before we got to those really high levels. And then also some who were selling during harvest that didn't actually realize, you know, the peak there. So really difficult marketing conditions, but favorable prices still. So $8 is not a bad price for wheat. It is challenging when you put that up against what our input prices are right now. So, you know, increased costs for fuel and inputs really makes that more challenging, especially when you don't have the yields. But again, much higher than what we've seen in recent years. They're still above $8. Some things we're watching to kind of what will impact those prices in the coming months. Well, last week we did have a really big weekly sales report. So it kind of seems like we've had very dismal export sales reports for the last month or so. We were just really overpriced in the world market, but with a lot of that sell-off pressure in futures, we did get a better bang for our buck for our customers. So we did have 37.4 million bushels in that export sales report. That's one of the largest that we've seen in recent years. The main buyers there were China, South Korea, and Mexico. Specific to hard red winter, our year-to-date leaders are Mexico, number one, followed by Japan, Nigeria, and Brazil. So Brazil is one of those markets that kind of comes and goes. It's not necessarily very consistent. And so to see it in the top four so far this year, that's encouraging. You know, hopefully we'll continue to see that as we move through this marketing year. Again, a big news factor that was kind of weighing in on futures markets is, number one, the strength of the dollar. Last week we saw that, you know, at almost a 20-year high. And so that's going to hurt us in terms of trying to make those export sales. But we saw maybe some of that backtrack at the end of the week. Also, a lot of news regarding the possibility of an agreement, which would allow for Ukrainian grain exports out of the Black Sea. You know, that's a great development. If we are able to see this through and those farmers are able to get their crop to market, you know, that would provide a little bit of relief financially for the country as it continues to kind of deal with war times and really hard conditions for those farmers trying to harvest a crop right now and then thinking about planting next year's crop. If they're not able to move that grain out of their system, it's going to be even more difficult. So, you know, good news, possible development, but at the same time, I think the industry realizes there's still a lot of logistical challenges to seeing that actually fulfilled. So it's kind of a wait-and-see approach at this time to know what kind of impact that will have on the futures market.
Well, Steely, you brought up a good point. You know, a lot of the yields were a little, you know, all over the place this year, and a lot of it had to do with Mother Nature, and a lot of struggles coming in from drought. Some people's places struggled with wildfires. You know, we had some up here in the Panhandle. A big thing that, you know, farmers are going to have to look at for next year is crop insurance. You know, how are things looking out for the insurance aspect of farmers for the next year or even this year?
Yeah, so we will get into our base price setting period there in August through the middle of September. So that'll be an interesting time to watch. What are the futures market and what will that price component be for the base price and those revenue policies? That's going to be important to watch. But we did have a new announcement from RMA last week about them trying to expand the ability for farmers to get coverage for double cropping. So this would be planting wheat this fall and then following that wheat immediately with a grain sorghum or soybean crop. Several of our Texas Panhandle counties, specifically on the eastern side of the Panhandle, were highlighted in this announcement that would be available where they're trying to streamline the application for a written agreement. It's still going to be a lot of stipulations. Maybe this won't be, you know, a huge win for Texas producers because we're not typically those who are in that double cropping scenario. Specifically here in the Panhandle, it's not a widely adopted practice. And so looking at, especially if you're in a drought condition, you know, you have to have moisture to get that second crop up and going. So definitely something to be following and making sure that our growers who will be purchasing wheat insurance know that this is something that might be available, might be a streamlined process if they're interested in looking at it as a possibility for their farm. But it also kind of spans several states. And so what will that mean for if we see an additional move towards this double cropping across the United States, specifically in these counties where they're trying to make that crop insurance more available? So that's just something to follow and watch. At the end of last week, we did have the deadline of July 15th for the annual forage policies. We've seen kind of more and more of our wheat growers who are using wheat for grazing look to that program. It can be very beneficial in drought conditions where you don't receive rainfall. So those are kind of the insurance side of things that we've been watching over the last few weeks.
Well, now, when harvest season comes around, you know, a huge thing that, you know, we've all been facing is, you know, supply demand, as well as, you know, that between bounds of getting things to places. We see it on the grocery store shelves. We see it for everyday items we need. Or if we go to, you know, a retail store, they can't get it in. When transportation, you know, comes towards the aspects of, you know, the wheat industry, how are things turning out? We're still going through the, you know, the after effects of a pandemic, and a lot of things are shut down still and not having enough labor. How are things looking for transportation of the wheat aspect in the wheat industry and even up here in the Panhandle?
Well, one of our major ways that we move wheat within the United States and even to our largest export destination in Mexico is through rail. And so it's been a major focus of the wheat industry. Even more specifically over the last 3 or 4 years, that we've tried to tackle some of the issues that we're seeing develop in rail transportation. Right now, you mentioned all of the things with the pandemic that have affected the labor shortage, and that has had a huge impact on rail reliability. We're seeing increased wait times. You know, a grain elevator could order for a rail train to show up, and then those cars are very delayed. Well, that affects the elevator's labor and the labor for the grain inspection service. And so they're having to hold over employees for additional time with really not anything to do because they're sitting there waiting for the rail car. So it's very unreliable and inefficient, and it creates additional problems down the line and additional cost. And so that all trickles down back to our wheat farmers who are selling into that market. And so we want to make sure that we're providing fairness and transparency and a more reliable rail system. So over the last week, a new development. In recent weeks, we've been testifying and meeting with Surface Transportation Board members who oversee these rail companies. They've asked for additional transparency, you know, additional reporting from the rail companies in recent weeks. We're seeing some of that come about now. So we're trying to be very active in that space and make sure that we're telling the story of what's happening on the ag side and what that means for our farmers. But in the last week, we signed on to a coalition letter that's supporting a new piece of legislation, the Freight Rail Shipping Fair Market Act. Some items in this bill would allow for additional transparency and fairness for shippers. One of the items is providing GPS information or telemetry information on these rail cars so that these locations could know, you know, are my cars going to get here today or not? They're usually only given one update per day, and it's very outdated information. And so maybe they wouldn't have to have that labor on staff at that time. They could wait until they're for sure know when those rail cars are arriving and then bring in that extra labor force. So that would really be helpful. That's in this bill. There's also an option for shippers to be able to charge demurrage. So if they are waiting on rail cars that were scheduled to get there and they're still not there, they would have some recourse in the system to provide some charges against the rail company for not providing that reliable service that was agreed upon. So a very instrumental bill, we think, in getting moving forward in this process of trying to provide that more reliable rail service, better rates for, you know, our grain shippers, which would then trickle down and help our wheat farmers and make us more competitive in the world. You know, we talked about different things that make wheat more or less competitive on those FOB prices. And one of those things is how expensive it is to get that wheat from the farmer to the endpoint where it can get on a ship and go overseas. And if we are a higher transportation cost, it just makes us less competitive and we don't see those export sales. So we'll continue to operate in this space and try to make sure that we're providing as much value as we can for our farmers.
Well, Steely, I have a kind of a two-parter question here. You know, the first part is, how are things looking on the transportation aspect to get from, you know, the farm to the elevator? And then once we get to the rail, you know, how are things looking when we get it to, you know, shipping cargoes out towards sea? How are things looking on the export side? And then secondly, how long do you think this bill is going to take to, you know, kind of be implemented? And will it be effective for next year's harvest season? How are things, what are we thinking time-wise and deadline-wise?
Well, something that you asked first is getting that wheat from the farmer to his local elevator. One of the challenges we're seeing there, again, labor-related, is a shortage of truck drivers. You know, we have to load that wheat onto a truck to get it to its next destination. So that's been challenging. Most of our farmers have kind of worked through some of those challenges and been able to keep that flow going, but certainly more difficult than what we've seen in recent years. Also, once we're there, you know, how are our transportation logistics from that point forward? Again, just these delays in getting the rail cars there is the number one complaint that we are hearing through the grain export channels. And then once we get it on a boat and seeing it moving, you know, that, to me, the news that we're hearing, aside from some of these, you know, grain inspection type challenges that we're hearing about in the labor market, that seems to be going a little bit smoother. Again, we did have a big exports weekly sales report, so that's commitments. That's not necessarily wheat on a boat, but that is an encouraging piece to this, that we can kind of commit to our customers that we can get that product to them.
Well, Steely, you know, a huge thing, and hopefully, you know, labor gets to flowing in a few more years. We're starting to see it all across agriculture, you know, whether it's the meat industry, wheat industry, corn industry, everything is struggling. But one thing that, you know, farmers really focus on too is, you know, when there's something emergency happens, you have to have some kind of backup plan or some sort of funding. And ERPs up here are huge when it comes to drought or wildfires and whatnot. How are things looking for ERPs for wheat producers here in the Panhandle as well as Texas?
Yeah, so we have several farmers who grow wheat who've received their letters from FSA kind of showing that they might be eligible for the emergency relief program. And I really just wanted to provide an update on that, that the deadline is coming up July 22nd. That is this Friday. So just make sure if you haven't kind of signed off on that letter and self-certified that you're eligible for the program and turn that back into FSA, you need to look at doing that. We're getting a lot of questions in our office related to the cause of loss because some counties may have triggered for a drought designation under that program, and some counties may have been close but not necessarily met the threshold. In that case, a lot of the recommendations are to look at maybe an excessive heat cause of loss. We do know that, you know, the severe freeze that came into Texas in 2020 or 2021 had an impact on some of our wheat acres. So that has been a cause of loss that I've heard some of our wheat farmers have turned in. But really take a very strong look at that. Some of the payments, I think, have been very beneficial for those who've received them to cover those losses in the 2020 and 2021 crops. And so just a reminder here of that upcoming deadline.
Well, Steely, it is always a pleasure to talk with you about what's happening in the wheat industry as well as Texas wheat producers and some of the new crucial bills and issues that are happening out there.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, that's it from us here at the KGNC studios. I apologize for the deeper, raspier voice, feeling a little under the weather, but still pushing through it. Don't forget, if you want more agricultural information, you can find all the interviews at KGNCNewsNow.com. And if you want to listen to some more KGNC news, don't forget you can check out Pasture to Pavement, Agriculture, the Original Innovators on Spotify, as well as our website. And don't forget to like, share, and comment on our new Facebook and Instagram pages. Have new updates, headlines, and what's going on out there in the community for our Panhandle producers. It's called KGNC Agribusiness News or KGNC Agribusiness News Hour. Go like it and follow it. And make sure that you thumbs it up and give it some looks and make sure that you always stay up to date on what's happening out there in the agricultural industry. But that's it from us here at the studio. And have a great and blessed rest of your Monday morning.